in the lengthier spells of sunshine. On to southwest Scotland and northern Scotland, where it will be a cloudy day and a breezy day with further showers. One or two heavy ones with snow likely over the hills. Some brighter spells are likely, particularly in southwest Scotland in the afternoon. Top temperature here, 7 or 8 Celsius. That's the forecast.
Many thanks, Alex. We've got the fun stuff, our book of the week, coming up in a moment right after this.
World War One on the BBC.
The Germans can't do poetry. We are the nation of Shakespeare, we're the nation of the Romantics.
The Great War, revealed through the music, images and words of the day.
The Germans want to defend their culture naturally. They see their culture as the opposite to the Western nations. They see British materialism and French decadence as things to be resisted.
1914 to 1918, the Cultural Front. Begins on BBC Radio 4 this Saturday morning at 10:30.
You're indeed listening to BBC Radio 4. As usual, we have the shipping forecast lurking in the not-too-distant future. Now, though, to our new book of the week. Peter Firth reads a selection of essays by the leading critic James Wood, collected in his book The Fun Stuff. Tonight, he considers the extraordinary talent of Keith Moon.
I had a traditional musical education in a provincial English cathedral town. I was sent off to an ancient piano teacher with the requisite halitosis, who lashed with a ruler at my knuckles as if they were wasps, and I sang daily in the cathedral choir, an excellent grounding. But what I really wanted to do, as a little boy, was play the drums. A friend's older brother had a drum kit, and I gawped at the spangled shells of wood and skin, and plotted how I might get to hit them and make a lot of noise. It wouldn't be easy. My parents had no time for all that thumping about, and the prim world of ecclesiastical music detested rock. But I waited until the drum's owner was off at school and sneaked into the attic, where they gleamed, fabulously inert, and over the next few years I taught myself how to play them. Noise, speed, rebellion. Everyone secretly wants to play the drums because hitting things, like yelling, returns us to the innocent violence of childhood. The narrator of Thomas Bernhard's novel, The Loser, a pianist crazed with dreams of genius, expresses the impossible longing to become the piano, to be at one with it. When you play the drums, you are the drums. The drummer who was the drums when I was a boy was The Who's Keith Moon, though he was already dead by the time I first heard him. He was the drums not because he was the most technically accomplished of drummers, but because his many-armed, joyous, semaphoring lunacy suggested a man possessed by the antic spirit of drumming. At the end of the early Who concerts, as Pete Townshend smashed his guitar, Moon would kick his drums and stand on them and hurl them around the stage. And this seems a logical extension not only of the basic premise of drumming, which is to hit things, but also an inevitable extension of Moon's drumming, which was to hit things exuberantly. The Who had extraordinary rhythmic vitality, and it died when Keith Moon died on the 7th of September 1978. Their music enacted the mod rebellion of its lyrics, "Hope I die before I get old." Pete Townshend's hard, tense, suspended chords seemed to scour the air around them. Roger Daltrey's singing was a young man's fighting swagger. John Entwistle's incessantly mobile bass playing was like someone running away from the scene of a crime, and Keith Moon's drumming in its inspired vandalism was the crime itself. Most rock drummers, even very good ones, are timekeepers. There is a space for a fill or a roll at the end of a musical phrase, but the beat has primacy over the curlicues. In a regular 4-4 bar, the bass drum sounds the first beat, the snare the second, the bass drum again hits the third, and then the snare hits the bar's final beat. This results in the familiar boom-da, boom-boom-da sound of most rock drumming. A standard-issue drummer playing along, say to the Beatles, "Carry That Weight," would keep his 4-4 beat steady through the line, "Boy, you're gonna carry that weight a long time," until the natural break, which comes at the end of the phrase, where, just after the word "time," a 2-beat half-bar readies itself for the repeated chorus. In that half bar, there might be space for a quick roll or something fancy with snare and hi-hat. Really, any variety of filler. The filler is the fun stuff, and it could be said that nearly all the fun stuff in drumming takes place in those two empty beats between the end of a phrase and the start of another. Drummers share an understanding that there is a proper space for keeping the beat and a much smaller space for departing from it, like a time-out area in a classroom. The more sophisticated drummer is often in time-out and is always busily showing off to the rest of the class while he is there. Keith Moon ripped all this up. There is no time-out in his drumming because there is no time-in. It is all fun stuff. The first principle of Moon's drumming was that drummers do not exist to keep the beat. He did keep the beat, of course, and very well, but he did it by every method except the traditional one. He played the drums like no one else, and not even like himself. I mean that no two bars of Moon's playing ever sound the same. He is in revolt against consistency. He is always vandalizing repetition. Keith Moon-style drumming is a lucky combination of the artful and the artless. To begin at the beginning, his drums always sounded good. He hit them nice and hard, and tuned the tom-toms low. He kept his snare pretty dry. This isn't a small thing. A good dry snare, properly struck, is a bark, a crack, a report. How a drummer hits the snare and how it sounds can determine a band's entire dynamic. Groups like Supertramp and the Eagles seem soft, in large part because the snare is so drippy and mildly used, and not just because the elves are apparently squeezing the singer's testicles. There is no great difference between The Who's live concert recordings and the studio songs. All of them are full of improvisation and structured anarchy, fluffs and misses. All of them seem to have the rushed gratitude of something achieved only once, from which emerges the second great principle of Moon's drumming, namely that one is always performing, not recording, and that making mistakes is part of the locomotion of vitality. The third great Moon principle, of packing as much as possible into a bar of music, produces the extraordinary variety of his playing. He seems to be hungrily reaching for everything at once. Take, for instance, the bass drum and the cymbal. Generally speaking, drummers strike these with respectable monotony. You hit the crash cymbal at the end of a drum roll as a flourish, but also as a kind of announcement that timeout has, boringly enough, ended, and that the beat must now go back to work. Moon does something strange with both instruments. He tends to ride his bass drum. He keeps his foot hovering over the bass drum pedal as a nervous driver might keep a foot on a brake, and strikes the drum often, sometimes continuously, throughout a bar. When he breaks to do a roll around the toms, he will keep the bass drum going simultaneously so that the effect is of two drummers playing together. Meanwhile, he delights in hitting his cymbals as often as humanly possible and off the beat, just before or after the logical moment, rather as jazz drummers do. The effect of all those cymbals being struck is of someone shouting out at unexpected moments while waiting in line, a yammer of exclamation marks, whereas his habit of entering a song by first crashing a cymbal and then ripping around the kit is like someone bursting into a quiet room and shouting, "I'm here." So alive and free is this drumming that one tends to emphasize its exuberance at the expense of its complexity. But the playing can be extremely complex. New technology allows listeners to isolate a song's individual players, and the astonishing isolated drum tracks from Won't Get Fooled Again and Behind Blue Eyes can be found on YouTube. On Won't Get Fooled Again, the drumming is staggeringly vital, with Moon at once rhythmically tight and massively spontaneous. You can hear him do something that was instinctive, probably, but which is hardly ever attempted in ordinary rock drumming. Breaking for a fill, Moon fails to stop at the obvious end of the musical phrase and continues with his break, over the line and into the start of the next phrase. Poetry, this desire to get more in, is called enjambment. Moon is the drummer of enjambment. For me, this playing is like an ideal sentence of prose, a sentence I have always wanted to write and never quite had the confidence to. A long, passionate onrush, formally controlled and joyously messy, propulsive but digressively self-interrupted, careful and lawless, right and wrong. You can encounter such sentences in Lawrence's prose, in Bellow's, and sometimes in David Foster Wallace's. Such a sentence would be a breaking out, an escape. And drumming has always represented for me that dream of escape when the body forgets itself, surrenders its awful self-consciousness. I taught myself the drums, but for years I was so busy being a good boy that I lacked the courage to own any drums. At school, I did play in a rock band, but I kept the fact very quiet. The kids I was playing rock music with did not overlap with the world of classical music. Drumming was a notional add-on, a supplement to the playing of proper instruments. Nowadays I see school kids bustling along the pavement, their large instrument cases strapped to them like diligent coffins, and I know their weight of obedience. Happy obedience, too. That cello or French horn brings lasting joy, and a repertoire more demanding and subtle than rock music's. But subtlety is not freedom, and sometimes it is rebellious freedom one wants, and only rock music can deliver it. It is no accident that punk got a fair amount of its inspiration from The Who. Here was a band that in one obvious way embodied success, but also dared failure. I mean the large amount of improvisation in their songs, the risky excess of their concert performances, the violent earnestness of their lyrics, and the epicenter of this successful failure was Keith Moon. Nowadays, he would probably be classed as having both ADHD and bipolar disorder. Fortunately for the rest of us, he grew up in post-war, non-therapeutic Britain and medicated himself with booze, illegal drugs, and illegal drumming. Born into a modest, working-class household in North London in 1946, Moon had a paltry education. A friend said to his biographer, Tony Fletcher, that you never felt one day he's going to be famous, you felt more likely that he was going to end up in prison. Throughout his short life, he was seemingly addicted to practical jokes. He set off cherry bombs in hotels, dressed up as Adolf Hitler, even rode a wheelchair down an airport staircase. There was a relentless, curious, drunken patience to this theatricalism, and certainly a kind of addicted commitment. The alcoholism and coke snorting were certainly addictions, but perhaps they were merely the solvents needed to maintain the larger, primal addiction to joking and play-acting. There is a sense in which Moon, as drummer, was another role. But role suggests choice, whereas these roles don't seem to have been chosen so much as depended on. The only performance that seems to have truly liberated Moon was the one he enacted behind the drum kit. I often think of Moon and Glenn Gould together, despite their great differences. Both started performing as very young men. Moon was 17 when he started playing with The Who, Gould just 22 when he made his first great recording of the Goldberg Variations. Both were idiosyncratic, revolutionary performers. For instance, both enjoyed singing and shouting while playing. Both were gregarious and essentially solitary, and with both men, all the other performing has the slightly desperate quality of mania, except the performance behind the instrument, which has the joyous freedom of true escape and self-dissolution. Gould becomes the piano, Moon becomes the drums. There are two famous Glenn Gould recordings of the Goldberg Variations, the one he made at the age of 22 and the one he made at the age of 51, just before he died. The opening aria of that piece sounds very different in each recording. In the young man's version, it is fast, sweet, running clear like water. In the middle-aged man's recording, the aria is half as fast, the notes so magnetically separated that they seem almost unrelated to one another. These two arias stand facing each other, separated by almost 30 years, as the gates of a life. I prefer the second version, but when I listen to it, oh, how I want to be the first. For both Moon and Gould, the performer's life was very short. Gould abandoned concert performance at the age of 31, and Moon was dead by the age of 32. Perhaps no one was very surprised by this. "He's gone and done it," Pete Townsend told Roger Daltrey. Yeah!
And tomorrow, James Wood examines the work of Kazuo Ishiguro. The Fun Stuff is read by Peter Firth, abridged by Eileen Horn, and produced by Clive Brill. It's a Pacificus production for BBC Radio 4, where in a few moments we have the shipping forecast and, as usual, to get us there. Sailing by.